community. This is Tipperary Midwest Community Radio.
Morning Call is brought to you by your local credit union.
We're working for you at your local credit union.
And you're welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. And Féile Fidelma 2012 is taking place this weekend in Cashel, commencing in the Cashel Palace Hotel this evening at about 7 o'clock and continuing until afternoon on Sunday. And of course, the weekend is devoted to the novels of Peter Tremain, which is the pseudonym of Peter Beresford Ellis, who is a very distinguished academic in his own right. And Peter has written 23 novels, with the main character being Fidelma, Sister Fidelma, and she's a sleuth, very well qualified sleuth, and she goes around Munster and various other places solving mysteries. And the weekend is devoted to the novels themselves, but also to the time in which the novels were written, which is 7th century Ireland, which was governed by the Brehon Laws. Peter is here in the studio, and also with him is David Wootton, who does wonderful work propagandizing the whole Fidelma world through the International Fidelma website. Gentlemen, you're very welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Seamus.
Good morning, Seamus.
Peter arrived yesterday. David arrived this morning after a horrific kind of flight, or a series of flights and delays and various other things from Charleston. But anyhow, they're both here. They're both looking very well. And you're very, very, very welcome to the programme. Peter, we'll start with you. It's your umpteenth visit to Cashel.
It is. First came here with my dad, who was from Cork City, who pointed out Cashel was the ancient capital of Munster. So I've known it man and boy.
Right, okay. And of course, you have been here for all the Fidelma weekends.
Indeed, yep.
Yeah. Now, you produce a novel a year, isn't that right, roughly?
That's right, yep.
And you will continue until your dying day producing a novel a year, will you?
Until the royalties run out.
Now, the latest one you produced is just barely out.
That was out last month. It's The Seventh Trumpet.
Trumpet.
And that is set between here and Turles.
Oh, here in Thurles, yes, yeah. Right. Now, I haven't got to read that. The last one I read was Behold the Pale Horse, which came out before that. And that was set in Italy. And if I just might remark on that, a very bloody kind of a novel, wasn't it?
It was a very bloody period in North Italy. It's set in Bobbio, which was founded by Columbanus in 612. And it's a wonderful abbey, and I was invited there several years ago to give a talk about Fidelma in the cloisters of Bobbio Abbey, and I was just amazed by the enthusiasm of people from the area, because the books go into Italian, of course, and they all crowded into the cloisters to hear me talk, and I was telling them about the situation and the culture that Columbanus came from. And they're very much aware of that Irish connection in Bobbio, and they do have an Irish music festival there. And one of the people asked me, well, why can't you bring Fidelma to Bobbio? So I thought and said, well, why not? And the next day in the local daily newspapers was a big headline, Fidelma in Noir, which is the word for crime novel, perché no? So perché no? I sat down and wrote a book. And it's all set against what was going on.
Right.
And
it fitted in, well, you broke a sequence. Most of your novels come in a sequence, and you broke the sequence to go back to that because it followed on from a previous novel which had taken place in Rome.
That's right. Fidelma had gone to Rome and solved a mystery there. So the only way I could bring her to Italy, rather than getting a new voyage there, was taking it back to when she leaves Rome to come back to Ireland, and she gets shipwrecked at Genoa, which is along the valley towards Bobbio. You know, you land at Genoa, you go through the Apennines and wind up at Bobbio Abbey.
And of course, she had a good excuse to go to Bobbio because an old teacher of hers, brother Ruan, or father Ruan, was a monk there. Or he was ill there, actually. Yes,
he'd joined the community at Bobbio, which was, as I say, very much an Irish community because of Columbanus and taking his followers there. And she hears that he's ill. So she decides to go to Bobbio from Genoa, and when she gets there, he is dying, and he warns her to flee from the area, which of course is a come-on for Fidelma. She's got to find out why. He then dies, but in fact he's murdered as he's lying dying to prevent him from telling her what really is going on there. So then it takes off.
And I was fascinated by the fact that Ruan was his name, which of course the Saint Ruan comes from my own neck of the woods in Laura in the north of Tipperary, you know.
Right.
But just not to labour it too much, Italy at that stage in the 7th century was as unruly as politically as, say, Ireland was in the 14th, 15th centuries.
Yep, there was invasion from Germanic tribes. There was people setting up their own principalities, fighting each other. There were differences between the Christianity of each groups. There was the Arian
heresies.
Schools, except they didn't think they were heresies.
Heresies, of course, at that time, yeah.
And the conflict was quite amazing.
Right, and of course, quite a lot of murders during that period, yeah.
Yeah.
David, we'll come back to you in a minute, Peter, but David, you publicised the whole Fidelma phenomenon, and how did you get gripped so much on Fidelma?
Well, I was a history major in college and didn't end up pursuing it professionally, but always had a love of it, and I was aware of Peter's nonfiction works for years. And through other organizations that we were involved in, we were aware of each other, and I contacted him at one point and said, we need to probably do a website to get the word out, because he had so many fans around the world, and he was getting letters from all kinds of people, and they were asking him all kinds of questions, which he couldn't possibly answer every single one that came in. And so we set up the website to address a lot of that, to help publicize the books, to, you know, get the word out. And only later did it turn into a society, when people that were checking out the website said, well, where do I join? And we didn't even have a clue that people were going to want to have a society. It was just sort of, well, we have a website. We didn't know we were going to have a club. And of course, it blossomed from there. And we've got members from literally all over the world, from Japan to Sweden to the U.S. to everywhere that you can think, every continent. It continues to spread.
Right. And you even produce a booklet, the Brehon.
Yes, thrice yearly we put one out, and it is, majority of it is updates on Fidelma in different countries, you know, what's happening in Italy, how are the German publishers handling it, and of course updates on Peter, as well as stories from Peter's past that readers and members are fascinated with, how Peter started out, you know, that he was a newspaper man, and that he, you know, Fidelma came along much later in life. You know, when you look back at his entire bibliography, that, you know, it goes from the lurid to the under the fiction writing pseudonyms to the highest level of scholarly works that you could find.
Absolutely, and frightening.
Yes. And what's funny is, when we have people that aren't aware that Peter Beresford Ellis and Peter Tremaine are one and the same, that write in to Peter Tremaine and say, you obviously have your facts wrong. Do you not understand that this happened and this was going on at this time, and you couldn't possibly be correct about this? To which we usually post something like that on the website with a response to, well, in fact, if you consult Peter Beresford Ellis's seminal book on the subject, you will find here are the answers to the questions, and here's a dozen other references to back it up. So that usually, we usually don't get a second response after that, you know, first holier than thou sort of questioning his authority or his scholarly background to the Fidelma novels.
And of course he keeps supplying you with plenty of copy for these, because he leads a fascinating life and he travels so much abroad, so you have plenty of copy as
absolutely
well.
and as we were talking about, you know, the Italians want him. Fidelma is wildly popular in Germany, in any number of countries, and they're all pulling at him to, you know, please come to this book fair. We want to interview. We want you to be featured as lead author at this symposium. And so, we're never at a shortage for filling the pages.
Yeah. You have the novels have been translated into how many languages now?
18.
18.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. What's been the latest?
Latest translation.
Yeah.
I suppose latest published translation has been Czech. There's a Japanese translation.
Who was the newest language to come on?
Oh, the newest language. Sorry. I think Breton.
Breton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As opposed to French. It's Celtic language, and the Bretons have published two novels and about a dozen short stories in magazines. Right. So it's taken off in Breton.
But it's fascinating. You mentioned Japanese. It's translated into Japanese, and we had what was her name, Marie Kai.
Yeah, Professor Kai.
Yeah. She came here. She's a translator of the novels, and she was here for the Fidelma in 2010. Isn't that right?
I think before that,
2008. 2008 was it?
Yeah. Yes.
And Greek, they have been translated into Greek.
Greek, yes. Yeah. Bulgarian, Estonian, Swedish.
As well, of course, the common languages like German, French, Italian, so on. Like
indeed,
that.
Yeah.
Now, you yourself, your academic background. Okay, Peter or David has mentioned about your academic achievements, but your linguistic achievements are most interesting, because in the current booklet, which David has produced so well again for the weekend, there is a story that originally appeared in Cornish.
Yes, for my sins, I'm a bard of the Cornish Gorseth. because I wrote a book, The Cornish Language and Its Literature, which became a seminal book in as much as it was the only book on the history of the Cornish language and literature at that time. This is going back to about 1973 or 4. So, yes, I have always... My background degrees are in Celtic studies, so obviously I gravitate around things I know, Celtic.
All the different Celtic languages.
Indeed, yeah.
Right. Now, David, apart from the fact of you missing a flight, or the flight missing you, or whatever we will describe it, there is another big disappointment for you this weekend, because you had a lovely plan for the launch of the weekend tonight, and it's not going to happen.
Yes, because. Very sad, but we were hoping. Dennis Heffernan is the beautifully voiced bartender in the... bar downstairs of Cashel Palace, and Dennis, among others, has sung Cashel My Hometown, which is an absolutely lovely song, and he has sung it on request at the drop of a hat for anyone who will ask at every Fela. And of course, many people were looking forward to it, you know, hearing him again this year, and we were going to have him come in and surprise everyone and open the festivities with it. But he's off in London, I believe, attending a wedding.
Yeah, that's right.
So timing, you know, weddings are so inconvenient, but you know, we'll move on.
But you were involved in encouraging him, I think, actually, to bring out his record. He recorded that,
yes,
didn't he?
Yes, when we were here in 2010, a number of people put out their camera phones, and he sang, and I think a couple of times they ended up on YouTube. And we said, you know, we need to get this down for posterity in some way, shape, or form. And the CD he came out with a local, at least one or two local musicians. I don't recall if it has three or four songs on it, including Cash on My Hometown. Absolutely lovely. And, of course, he's a wonderful a cappella singer. And so even with the accompaniment, it's even better.
Right, that's great. But it's sorry, we're missing him, and of course all the people that will be there, because one of the great joys is when we adjourn to the Cellar Bar, usually after the formalities on Friday and Saturday nights. Dennis not only serves, but he also comes out from behind the bar at strategic moments to burst into song. So
indeed, he does.
Absolutely, yeah.
He's a special character. Finally, Peter, we have a distinguished array of speakers tonight, or over the weekend.
Yes, it's quite nice. Each Fela, we do have some really good speakers that, for some reason, come out in support of the Fidelma books, and we've got Cora Harrison, well-known.
Is doing something similar.
She, about, I think, early 2007, she started a series featuring a female Brahan, but her period was 16th century, and she's dealing with the period where Brehon laws were coming into conflict with the English law, Tudor conquests, and this is a period where the Tudors were trying to eradicate Gaelic law, yeah. Irish language.
I think actually the title of her talk is "The Conflict in Law," or "The Conflict of Law," or something. I think that's the title of her place. Now she's one. Now Cormac. What's Cormac's second name?
Quillenall,
but his pseudonym is
Cormac Miller.
Miller, yeah. And he's also going to speak, and he's a writer of. Also mystery novels, isn't he?
Indeed, crime he novels. Is. Yep. He's a professor at TCD, but moonlights as Cormac Miller, crime novelist. Oh. And, of course, his mother was the famous writer Eilish Dillon.
Dillon, oh, right.
And so he is very much into this genre of literature.
Right.
So he is he's quite... a good speaker.
Yeah. So anyhow, look, we have a very interesting program lined up. I'm looking forward very much to it. I hope you enjoy your weekend in Cashel. And thanks very much for coming in to talk to us.